You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Hey teachers, it's Tim here with another episode of the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Great to have you with us. Have you ever taught a student that started nearing an advanced stage and you felt like you weren't able to keep teaching them and so sought out another teacher to hand them over to? This is a really common situation, and in fact, I've been in this situation as well. In today's interview, I want to challenge you to rethink if you really need to hand over your students when they hit a certain level, particularly after you've been teaching them for so many years and have built an incredibly strong bond with their whole family. If you've ever wondered, can I do this? When you think about teaching your students advanced repertoire, then today's episode is for you, because that's exactly how my guest felt. This month on the blog, podcast, and inside our membership, we're focusing on teaching early advanced students, especially helping answer that question, can I actually do this, when you've never done it before? I just think it's really sad that so many teachers don't think they're capable of teaching more difficult repertoire, even though they've worked with their students for many years, often are performers themselves at a relatively high level, and you've taught these students for maybe up to a decade even. And it's sad because, you know, you've put in so much time, effort, and energy into their student. You've built such strong connections with their family. You've slaved away to build their technique and skills. And just when they're starting to come into their own as musicians and get to the holy grail pieces in the repertoire, you feel you don't have that confidence, and so you give them away to another teacher. And so not only are you losing all the goodwill and knowledge you've imparted over many years, you also lose all that future income, and teaching more advanced students can actually be more lucrative than beginners by a significant margin. Of course, the main blockage, as we'll hear from our guest today, and perhaps this is something that you've felt as well, is a lack of confidence and some serious imposter syndrome going on, which, let's be honest, we've all felt that when stepping in to teach advanced students for the first time. It's completely normal and natural, and I hope today's episode challenges you to consider whether you can put these feelings aside and teach these students with confidence, given some of the suggestions that we're going to make today. Now, while I think about it, here's what we've got in store for you on the podcast this month. It's super exciting. Next week, episode 355, we've got our advanced teacher, Jenna Williamson, she's one of our top music teaching specialists here, to talk about exactly what students and teachers need to know at this early advanced level, and to give advice on how to upskill yourself to prepare for your first advanced students if you are interested in taking on these students. Episode 356, the week after, is a special chat with our top music friend Mike Grunday on why coaching isn't just for athletes. This is a bit of a special episode, not related to our advanced students, but that I wanted to share with you, as it's full of stories that will tug at the heartstrings and give you a lot of food for thought as Mike shares the stories of his work teaching music to children and teachers in Rwanda. And it's just going to give you a great perspective on things as you start to think forward to next year. And then we're going to finish the month, episode 357, with a sneak peek inside our brand new Advancing Pianists course. This is a course we've created for our members inside Top Music Pro to help teachers just like you move into the early advanced teaching level if you've never done it before. So you can get more confidence, keep more students, earn more money. We're going to have your back all this month on the podcast and over inside our membership. I'm going to have more information about the Advancing Pianist course next week when we talk to the course creator, the amazing Jenna Williamson. My guest today, Suzanne Andrews, is a Melbourne-based teacher and has been a music educator, performer, and accompanist since her teenage years. Whilst her university degree is in classical piano, she has much experience teaching and performing a diverse range of musical styles. Her passions include creating performance spaces that foster a sense of safety and self-expression, the role of embodiment in music making, and leading all manner of sing-alongs, both in and out of the teaching room. She teaches piano at a couple of secondary schools here in Melbourne, supplemented by a small private studio. Welcome to the show, Suzanne. Great to see you again.
Lovely to see you too, Tim. Thanks for having me in.
Can you start by telling people a little bit about your studio, where you are firstly in the world, your numbers, your ages?
Absolutely. Well, actually, nowadays, the bulk of my instrumental work is through two schools, secondary schools, Melbourne Rudolf Steiner School and Ivanhoe Grammar. And I do have a few private students as well. So the bulk of my students are aged between 12 and 18. And some of my friends sometimes ask for lessons as well. So they're in the adult age group. And yeah, I wouldn't say it was a conscious decision to gravitate more towards school employment than boosting my private studio. And it might change in future. But I think it was, the trend was affected by factors over the years, such as not having a suitable setup at home or having after hours commitments, meaning that I preferred working in the school day.
Yeah. And for those listening from America, for example, this will be, it sound a little bit weird to you because over here in Australia and in the UK, for example, students come out of classes. So they might be in the middle of maths. They'll come out for a 30-minute lesson with someone like Suzanne at the piano, and then they'll go back to their classes. And I know that doesn't happen in every country. So Suzanne is one of the teachers at the school who takes private students during the day, which is something that I've also done. And it's a good system in some ways, particularly when you also have private students, if you want to do both, because you do fill your days and you have that collegiality, you're employed by a school. So there's some security and things. So it's a nice opportunity, I think, for stability and daytime work. So I can understand why you're doing it. So you tend to teach ages 7 to 12, so mainly high schoolers. How long have you been teaching for, and have you got any formal qualifications?
Gosh, over 25 years now. Time has flown. I think I started working at Yamaha Music School in Malvern, which is an inner city suburb of Melbourne. First year uni. So I was really lucky.
Is that the one on Dandenong Road?
It was on Winter Street, which ran off Glenferrie Road. It moved years ago, but
because I only recently noticed there's one quite near me in what would be Murrumbeen, Carnegie, I think.
I think that's where it moved. That's where it moved how many years ago. But it's great to still see some familiar faces from the music staff there decades later. And yeah, so I studied a Bachelor of Music and Piano and a Bachelor of Arts at the University of Melbourne. And I also have my LMSA in piano. And I sat that exam back in university days. And that's a diploma level exam for American listeners.
Yeah, well, we'll need to explain some of these terminology as well. But I think we can explain that as I get to the next point, which is why we're here and chatting today about teaching advanced students. Because back in January 2022, I went and looked back. You emailed me a question, which I think will resonate with a lot of our listeners. And you said the following. You said, I would like help in preparing a teenage student for an A-must-A examination in piano. So, we should explain A-must-A and L-must-A. These are performance diploma exams here in Australia and also run in Britain, where a student has to perform a solo recital of, I think it's 30 to 40 minutes at A-must-A level, probably a bit longer for L-must-A. That's the highest level. And pieces at the A-must-A level would be things like Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata, a Prelude and Fugue from Bach, some of the waltzes from Chopin. I mean, there's a whole huge list, and you generally play four works, one from each era, and it's a full-on recital, and you have general knowledge questions asked of you at the end. So that's the A-must-A, and then L-must-A is just even harder music. So what are some of the L-must-A pieces? We're talking Chopin etudes, like we're at the top of the...
Yeah, just gets a little bit chunkier, maybe some of the more challenging preludes and fugues. Maybe a few more racks.
Yeah, Rachmaninoff. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, and that's a slightly longer recital. So that's, so Suzanne has that L-must-A. She's done that performance diploma. I have done the A-must-A. And what we're talking about today is Suzanne teaching her first A-must-A student, which she hadn't done before. So anyway, your email went on to say, whilst I have some classical performance experience, perform chamber music quite regularly and have completed my LMSA, I haven't had experience teaching above certificate of performance level. So certificate of performance is kind of the level after grade 8 here in Australia, where they start moving towards more of the diploma repertoire. We'd call it in early advanced repertoire. My student and family would love to continue with me despite this, which I agreed to. So I'd like to know that I haven't bitten off more than I can chew, number one. Number two, if we proceed, then how can I draw on as many resources as possible to support her preparation? This naturally includes my own preparation, seeking of a mentor, feeling resourced by a community of teachers on a similar journey. And you shared an article that I'd written about it. So Before we go on, I should just mention that I'm really passionate about helping teachers retain advanced students and give it a shot like you did, which I was really happy to support you and say, how can we help you, Suzanne, feel confident doing this? Because I think it's really sad when we teach students for 10 years or something. They're our best students. They're the ones that we're most connected with and we love the most. And then they get to a certain level and we go, oh, we can't teach you anymore. I'm sorry. I'll need to hand you over to another teacher. And so we lose all of that relationship. We lose the future income as well, all our hard work. And I just don't think we always have to do it. I think it's important to consider it as an option, but I don't think it's the only option. So did you have a feeling of that sense of loss if you had given up on, it was Maddie, wasn't it, her name?
Absolutely, particularly, I mean, there's different types of loss, aren't there? The connection, financial loss even. But, yeah, particularly from the point of view of connection, that would have been a real loss to me because we'd been working together for 10 years and, gone through lots of peaks and troughs together, shared lots of bad musical puns. seen peaks and troughs in Maddie's enthusiasm and confidence. So, yeah, it's a lot to share together. And so it was definitely something to, some of these doubts were definitely something to interrogate.
So can you tell us how you were feeling at the time you wrote that and what your main concern was?
I think I'd come across you in some of the piano teaching threads and I'd never met you, but there was some kind of warmth in your presence that made it feel okay to be a bit vulnerable, because there's this weird, slightly dumb thing that you just want to come across as if you know everything always, you know. And I mean, how
That's
do
so
we
true.
We're human beings? And you'd hope until the day we die, we're open to, you know, stay humble and open to continuing the learning journey. So that was one of the most valuable things for me, just to be able to have the courage to open up and say, okay, this is what I do know and don't know, and stop just trying to hide in a way. But yeah, I felt disconnected from professional community and support, essentially. And I think it's a really easy trap for instrumental teachers to fall into. You know, we're hidden away in our teaching room, and unless we consciously put in the effort to reach out for connection, then it can sometimes feel a bit lonely. Yeah, and I think I also had this doubt that because I haven't solely channeled my energies and passion towards teaching and performing classical repertoire, that maybe I should leave it to teachers who had. So there was that sort of niggling doubt as well.
And I think that's all super common and expected. And I've felt like that as well. I remember when I was first getting into the teaching, I was trying to prove myself, and I would get put back in my box very, very quickly when I would go to a masterclass run by some amazing teacher who could play anything without any music and pick it up anywhere. And I was just like, oh my goodness, I am really rubbish at this. It's really easy to judge yourself and feel like you're not good enough and things like that. So congratulations on having the courage and reaching out. And let's go on with the rest of the story, because you did decide to work with Maddie and prepare her. And we'll tell you how that went in a second. But how did you prepare yourself? So I guess some questions that teachers might be thinking as they're listening would be, you know, were you able to play all the pieces yourself at a performance level? Is that important? Yes or no? Did you have lessons yourself on the pieces? What were your next kind of steps? So you said yes to Maddie. What happened next?
I said yes to Maddie, and I could certainly play a polished version of some of the program and perhaps a slightly less polished performance standard in some of the other pieces. What I did feel was important, though, was that I understood the stylistic, technical, expressive demands of each of the works and was able to capture these in my own playing. And in terms of my own learning process, rather than getting lessons myself, I dive deeply into practice of the repertoire and some related repertoire. I did some in-depth stylistic research where necessary. I booked Maddie in for specialist lessons herself, and I listened to a whole heap of recordings by the greats.
Yeah, it's definitely important, that whole, once you get to that advanced level, it is about style, making sure that the interpretation, because you're free to, one of the things we're trying to teach students at this level is that it's up to them in some ways how they interpret these pieces. And you can look at other people playing, your student can watch you play and demonstrate things. Here's an opportunity. Here's a one way to interpret this. But there are, it's a continuum. There are options here within, though, an understanding of the general style. You don't want to play something Bach like you might play Bartok. I mean, there are styles to these eras. So I think that is really important. I must say that when I started teaching more advanced students, I definitely had lessons because I did my AMSA as an adult. And I learned so much by having lessons on advanced music. And it didn't even have to be the same music as I was teaching other people, because I could easily take the things I was learning and the techniques and the practice and the stylistic things to other works that the students were learning. So I think that is super important. Was Maddie aware that you were doing this for the first time and maybe you were a little bit shaky? And what about the parents?
They were both aware. I was very upfront. We have quite open and a trusting relationship. Of us, her mum, Maddie, and myself. I took lessons at her house. So yes, they were aware. And the first thing her mum said was she couldn't imagine changing teachers, which felt nice. I assured Maddie and her mum that I had the experience required and I had the resources at hand just to, put their minds at rest.
Yeah, that's great. Because I can imagine that could be a block for teachers listening. You know, what will the parents think? But then again, as you say, once you've been doing this for, I mean, you're going to have taught this student for at least a few years, probably five, maybe even more. You're going to have a pretty good relationship with the parents anyway. So hopefully that honesty will be there. Did the feelings of being an imposter and your lack of confidence ever go away during this process?
Imposter syndrome is a funny one, right? Because the quietly confident voice and the nervous Nelly voice can coexist within. And you'd almost think that one would cancel the other one out, but not necessarily. But I've got to say that as time went on, reflecting on the doubts felt distracting. They almost felt self-indulgent. And so I just got on with it. And I think it's reflective of life in general. You know, we have our confident sides, we have our slightly more fragile sides, and I think it's what makes us human.
And I think it's also can be easy for instrumental teachers to stay in a comfort zone as well and teach what you know, teach the music you know, teach the ages you know. So perhaps, you know, having this opportunity can really open up your boundaries and push you a little bit harder and make you a better teacher more generally too, because I know that if you do challenge yourself to this kind of thing and you go and put yourself in front of other teachers and you learn hard repertoire, you will become a better teacher of all your students, right down to those beginners. Hi, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking join now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside. What are your biggest tips for other teachers who are in this position?
Do you mean in relation to taking on diploma students or imposter syndrome?
No, I'm specifically taking on advanced students. So you're at this precipice. You've got students moving up through the grades. You're starting to go, oh, am I good enough to teach this level? What advice would you give or what tips would you have for them?
I think trusting your gut is important. Yeah, trusting your gut as to whether you're ready to take on the diploma students. I think too, it makes a difference if your student is hardworking. So really having a gauge of the student's work ethics makes a difference too. And being really upfront with the student as to the type of commitment involved in diploma examinations, because it's considerable. I think that's the main advice. So also I've had considerable performance experience with repertoire, and I really do think that's important as a teacher at this level, because such a huge chunk of the exam is performance etiquette and confidence and skills, and unless you can really empathize with what it's like on stage with some of this quite virtuosic repertoire, then it could be quite hard to support the student.
And I tend to agree with that, and when I and going through the process of doing my own AMRSA really cemented that, how much work you have to put in, how much practice you have to do, how many practice run-throughs you've got to do under pressure in front of crowds to really get comfortable is really important. So I would agree, for teachers who want to contemplate this, having lessons on the repertoire with an advanced teacher will be fantastic and will make you much more confident. And then and performing it in front of people, I think you're right. Speaking of performances, I took you and Maddie for a mock exam. Actually, she got closer to exam date, which was great fun. And in fact, you took Maddie for lessons with a number of prominent teachers and examiners. How important was that for Maddie, well, and for you?
It was a wonderful and rewarding and fun experience. Yeah, I found the teachers, including yourself, they were very gracious and very generous with their time and wealth of expertise, and also enthusiastic to take the opportunity to support Maddie in this way. And she actually still remembers your adorable cat, which is lovely.
Everyone listening knows Bronson. And I imagine one of the things, and I played for a lot of people when I was preparing mine, you would have got different opinions on stylistic interpretation and approaches, right? So how do you then rectify, well, it's not the right word, is it? Clarify that in your head and work out which way to go. Because some will say, no, you can't pedal this, or you can, or this is to this, or that's to that.
I found especially in Baroque repertoire, there were a lot of different interpretations. And I'd say I've got different strengths and weaknesses, as many teachers do with different periods. And the Baroque period was the period that I'd studied the least and performed the least. So I was like a sponge in my learning process around this style. But yes, it's very, as you would know, Tim, and as lots of listeners would know, there are many different interpretations.
Yes, and you only have to look at and listen to Glenn Gould or someone like that and compare him to any other people. Like, I mean, speed, articulation.
Absolutely,
I mean,
and many everything's different, up for grabs. Additions too.
Yes, that's right.
Absolutely.
And so how did you settle on something?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it was always a relaxing process, because I was on a learning curve myself. but also it was an exciting process, because Maddie, I could really see her own musical voice maturing in this process, and she'd compared different teachers' approaches. And, you know, by the end she was taking the initiative to articulate to me the interpretation she enjoyed the most and resonated with her the most, which is a really exciting stage, because I think another trap we can fall into as classical musicians is feeling like we always have to subvert our voice to, I don't know, maybe the notation or what a certain famous pianist, what their interpretation is. But I think it actually is quite the contrary, that it's a great opportunity for us, you know, similar to, say, improvised music, that we can have just as much of our voice expressed through the music and the interpretation.
You gave me an update midway through. You said, you may remember Maddie is the first student I've guided through AMRSA preparation. She's going well and has had a couple of lessons with an AMEB, that's our exam board examiner, who gave feedback that she's technically strong but needs some more work on stylistic elements. We're aiming for the Metropolitan Session 1, so start of 2023. Having a session with an examiner, this may not be something that other exam boards do, but it is something that you can organized with the AMEB. Was that quite useful for you?
It was amazing. Yeah. And thanks for some some tips there, Tim. It was, yeah, we really appreciate that because I, yeah, you had some contact numbers and emails I just didn't have. So I really appreciated that. And it was so invaluable. It was, yeah, I mean, from my angle, I'd forgotten how inspiring and instructive and at times even affirming it can be to attend observation lessons, perhaps particularly when with prominent teachers, I'm teaching my own students. So yeah, that was from my angle. And for Maddie, it was, she really appreciated performing in a variety of different settings on beautiful instruments. And as I said earlier, starting to develop her own musical voice.
Now, one of the other aspects of the AMRSA exam is general knowledge. So the examiner at the end of the exam will ask the student questions. They could choose anything to ask about anything to do with any of the pieces. How did you go about helping Suzanne prepare for this? Because often it's like a forgotten thing. It's left to the last minute.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the student in at the AMRSA level requires an in-depth understanding of style and structure and historical background of the works and uses this knowledge as a basis for discussing the interpretive choices they make in their program. And so it's huge. And yeah, so I've got to say that Maddie, she was so studious in this area. And so that lightened the load a lot for me. But Tim, you've published an incredibly useful PDF on journal knowledge, and Maddie and I purchased that. So thank you very much for that. It was, yeah, it can be a little bit daunting with such a wide field. And also when the student wants to be practicing their pieces and how do they divide the time between theory and music. And I mean, naturally, we discussed general knowledge in the learning process, which I think is quite important. But yeah, I really appreciated those extra resources. And on top of this, I booked Maddie in with a specialist teacher to for focus on general knowledge, which she found invaluable as well.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I must say that doing the general knowledge work, which will form the basis for these resources that I've created, it did inspire and help me play better, I think, just knowing the background, why these pieces were composed, when, what was going on in the composer's lives, all of those kinds of things. I think it actually adds huge meaning to your ability to put across a convincing performance. So I actually think it's really important. And thank you for mentioning the bundle. We've got an AMRSA general knowledge resource bundle. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. It really covers all the kinds of questions students are going to be asked and the background to all the different eras and examples of four pieces, one from each of those eras. So glad that was useful for you. So we received some fantastic news a few months ago, I guess it was. You said, I wanted to pass on the news that after a great performance last week, I was page turning. Oh, that's a nice little trick. So you got to be in there. Maddie was awarded her AMRSA. Yay. Round of applause. I'm proud of how hard she worked and how well she played, and she's delighted with the result. Many thanks for your support along the way, including your encouragement in the face of my initial feelings of imposter syndrome being new to diploma teaching. Both Maddie and I are very appreciative. How much of a relief was it to get the result, and how did that make you feel?
Oh, we were so happy. Yeah. I received her phone would have been off at school, obviously. Students need to turn their mobile phones off at school, and that's when I found the result. But I emailed her, and when she saw the message, I think she wrote, "Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god!" 7 times, and yeah, all these celebratory emoticons. So yeah, she was over the moon, and we'd both channeled a lot of time and energy and enthusiasm towards it. So it felt like a real buzz. Yeah.
How old is Maddie?
16.
16. And so is she going to go on to AMRSA? Is she continuing lessons? What's her plan?
Well, the plan always was after she sat this AMRS piano exam that she'd channel her energies into sitting her AMRS cello exam.
Oh, wow. She's a multi-instrumentalist. I'd forgotten. Yes. Oh, my goodness. So is she doing that?
Yes. So she's doing that. And with the plan to return to her piano playing afterwards. She's an excellent improviser and jazz player too. So I'd really love to see her getting some specialised lessons in her improvisation. She, whenever we'd take a pause in her classical lessons and I'd write notes, she'd start playing some crazy jazz riff. And so I'd really love, yeah. So I think, you know, I think her latest plan was actually to study horticulture at uni once she got there, and perhaps do a diploma of music on the side. And I was excited to hear that she'd quite like to do some accompanying work as a part-time job. So that would be a great way for her music to continue to flourish.
Absolutely. I keep trying to tell kids I know, yeah, keep playing, keep practicing, because you can make money much better than standing really in McDonald's for 9 hours. You can make the same in 1 hour of accompanying or playing for an audition or something.
Yeah, I was so much richer than my friends at uni. It was funny. some of them are richer than me now, but back then I was the richest.
Hopefully you thanked your parents for the investment that got you there.
I did.
So are you going to take on any other diploma students?
I may well take on some other diploma students, yes.
And you'll feel much more confident, right?
I feel a lot more confident. It was, it was a really beautiful journey, and I'm really glad I took it on. And it was so great being around some of these teachers like yourself. It's so inspiring. Even kind of the creative and imaginative presence of different musicians is such a beautiful energy to be around, like, let alone the words that come out of their mouth. It's really beautiful to share that, the enthusiasm for the repertoire.
So if you could wrap it all up, how would you kind of summarize the journey that you've been on as a teacher for the last 18 months or so?
It was all the feels. It was, it was exciting, a tiny bit nerve-wracking at times, a lot of work, but very worthwhile work. And, yeah, I really felt like I grew as a musician and a teacher as well as a human. Sounds a bit cheesy. But it's true. I've really forged a deepened the connection between me and Maddie, and we're still in touch. And she actually texted recently saying, can you believe that I actually missed receiving the AMUS homework thread? And I'm not sure if she was joking. Perhaps she was. But, yeah, it was a wonderful journey, and I'm really glad that I invested that time.
Well, I'm glad we could be of a support to you. And I know you're a member of Top Music Pro. And if people want to connect with you and they're also members, they can certainly connect with Suzanne through our membership. And I think, you know, it really sums up just how important mentorship and community is, to have a group of people around you, not just me, but other people who I could call on, you know, using all our networks to support you. That's what I love doing and what I want to do more of. So congratulations to you for putting in the effort, because I know it was hard. There's a lot of stress. I know it myself, because I've put students through the same exam. It's really stressful. But it does get easier, particularly after that first one, when you're like, oh, yeah, I can do this. And suddenly you're like, all right, let's go. I can do this again.
Next.
So, yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Suzanne. And I know that you're going to be involved, hopefully, coming up in the next few months as we launch our fantastic, we've got a brand new course coming into Top Music Pro, all about teaching advanced students and how to do it, with the amazing Jana Williamson. And we're hoping that you'll be involved in that as well, as we share some things, maybe do a live workshop. A thank you to you for all that you've done for Maddie, and congratulations.
Thanks so much, Tim. It was a real pleasure to come in today, and yes, I'm very excited to jump in on the next project.
Fantastic. All right. See you soon.
See you later.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Suzanne. Did it give you a few little thoughts about whether you might be able to do what Suzanne did? I really hope it has opened up some lines of thinking for you to whether you could keep those advanced students rather than feel like you need to hand them over to another teacher. Now, I totally understand, by the way, many of you listening will be like, well, I don't actually want to teach advanced students. And that, of course, is totally fine. You've got to teach the students you most enjoy teaching. And I know many of you love teaching the preschoolers. Many of you love teaching those early, regular sort of age beginners of 6 to 12 years. I personally love teaching transfer students and teenagers. We've all got our own areas of specialty that we love. I guess what I'm hoping this month's works on the podcast and the blog, YouTube, and in our membership will get you thinking, though, is if in the back of your mind you did have this thought, well, maybe I could start teaching some early advanced students, then I really hope that the resources we provide for you this month will allow you to take that plunge, try it out, and see how it goes, just like Suzanne did in today's episode. Well, that's it for today's episode. I can't wait to speak again with you next week when we're chatting with Jenna Williamson all about getting ready to prepare students for that early advanced stage. Until next week, I'm Tim Topham. You've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. I'll speak to you soon. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.